from your hostess with the mostest, Lauren Hines.
This is I Did It My Way, the podcast that brings you into the story of leading entrepreneurs and tastemakers.
Chef Gail Gand is a nationally acclaimed pastry chef, restaurateur, cookbook author, and television personality, teacher, entrepreneur, and mother. Chef Gail Gand has been recognized as Outstanding Pastry Chef of the Year by the James Beard Foundation and by Bon Appetit magazine, and has been inducted into the Chicago Chefs Hall of Fame. For 8 years, Gail hosted the Food Network series Sweet Dreams, the first nationally televised all-dessert show anywhere. Gail has made appearances on The Martha Stewart Show, Oprah, The Dr. Oz Show, Baking with Julia, that's Julia Child, Good Morning America, The Rachel Ray Show, and The Today Show, to name a few. She competed on Iron Chef America and has been featured as a celebrity judge on Food Network Challenge, Last Cake Standing, Top Chef, and Top Chef Just Desserts. Gail is the founding pastry chef and partner of the beloved Chicago restaurant True, opened with longtime culinary partner Chef Rick Tramonto and restaurateur Rich Melman in 1999. True quickly became a sensation among Chicago's fine dining community and has earned ecstatic praise from reviewers, receiving accolades from the James Beard Foundation, the Michelin, Mobile, and AAA guides, Relais Gourmand, Wine Spectator magazine, and was named Chicago's best restaurant by Chicago Magazine. Prior to opening True, Gail and Tramonto earned increasing acclaim at their Chicago area restaurants, Trio and Brasserie Tea, and at Stapleford Park, an historic country house near Melton Mowbray in Leicester, England, where in 1991, Tramonto and Gail Gand, became the first American chefs to earn a Michelin Red A. Prior to opening True, Gand and Tramonto earned increasing acclaim at their Chicago area restaurants Trio and Brasserie Tea and at Stapleford Park near Melton Mowbray in Leicester, England, where in 1991, Tramonto and Gand became the first American chefs to earn a Michelin Red M. Gail is a prolific cookbook author with 8 titles to her credit. She has also co-authored American Brasserie, Butter, Sugar, Flour, Eggs, and True, a cookbook from the legendary Chicago restaurant. More recently, Gand authored Just a Bite, Short and Sweet, Chocolate and Vanilla, and Gail Gand's Brunch, now in its 5th printing. Gail produces her own artisan root beer, Gail's Root Beer, which is available nationally. And each year in the spring months, Gail and her son Gio supply local restaurants. And each year in the spring, Gail supplies local restaurants with wild ramps foraged from wooded areas near their suburban Chicago home. Gail was the chef in residence in 2011 and 2012 at Ilawa Farm in Lake Forest, Illinois. Gail continues to host a series of cooking classes and activities in Ilawa Farm Kitchen. In addition, Chef Gand frequently teaches cooking classes at such places as Eataly, Chicago, Blackberry Farm in Tennessee, King Arthur Flour in Vermont, and Zingerman's in Michigan, just to name a few. She has 2 classes available on Craftsy.com, one on meringues and the other on custards. She also does lots of public speaking, cooking demonstrations, and book signings, both locally and abroad. She also appears frequently at national and international food and wine festivals, such as the Epcot Food and Wine Festival at Disney World, the Aspen Food and Wine Classic, the World Gourmet Festival in Bangkok, the San Diego Food and Wine Festival, Pebble Beach Food and Wine Festival, etc. In the summer of 2013, Gail was the guest chef for 2 weeks on A. Rosa's Rhone River cruise through the south of France. In the summer of 2008, 2 of Gail's desserts were featured at the USA House at the Beijing Olympics. In 2011, Chef Gand was chosen by Mayor Daley to create the desserts for Chicago's welcome dinner for China's President Hu in 2011. Gail participates in many national and local charities. In 2010 and 2011, she was a mentor in First Lady Michelle Obama's Chefs Move to Schools initiative, which helps fight childhood obesity through nutritional education. Gail holds a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree from the Rochester Institute of Technology, majoring in silver and gold mining, and attended culinary school at La Varenne in Paris. Gail's late father, Bob, and brother Gary are both professional musicians, and Gail performed frequently with them as a child in the Gann Family Singers, including at Disneyland, University of Chicago Folk Festival, Ozark Folklore Center, Expo 67 in Montreal, and the 1973 World's Fair in Spokane, Washington. Her mandolin teacher was Jethro Burns of Homer and Jethro fame. She resides in Riverwoods, Illinois, with her husband, Jimmy Sedita, son, Gio, two daughters, Ella and Ruby. For the latest about Chef Gail Gand, visit www.gailgand.com. Welcome, welcome, creatives. Welcome, tastemakers. Welcome, all of our friends. This is, of course, I'm your host, Lauren Hines, and I am so privileged and honored today to bring to you all, okay, you already see it on the video if you're watching the video version, none other than the legendary, amazing Mrs. Chef Gail Gand. Welcome, Gail, to the video podcast today.
Thank you so much. You can call me Chef, you can call me Gail, either one's fine.
Okay, cool. So not the honorable, amazing Chef Gand. No, you know, I have to just Gail's fine.
Okay. You know, sometimes I'll be working in a kitchen doing a big event, and there'll be, you know, 20 chefs in there that are all cooking their one little dish.
Right.
And so I'll yell, "Hey, chef!" And, you know, 20 people all look up.
Oh,
so
that's funny.
I often will be like, just use my first name so I know whether you're talking to me or not.
That's hilarious. That'll be okay. Great, Gail. Well, I am so thankful that you have come and agreed to just chat with our group a little bit, because I think if it's one thing everyone in our community can agree with, especially on the events and the planning and coordinating side, is just how really, as many times as we're in the public space, how alone sometimes or how lonely we can feel. And we just really need to hear the journey of others and feel encouraged by it and just really see what people have gone through. And I think because you've had such a public success, a public life before so many people, I think it's really critical that people understand the steps that got you there and the pages that weren't always pretty to get there. So thanks again, Gail, for joining us. And
sure.
I was reading your bio and I had no idea you were a musician.
My family are all musicians, so you kind of don't get a choice in my family what you start out doing. You can switch later. You can choose again later, but they always start out in music.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. So that was cool. I read about Jethro being your mandolin trainer. I was like, what?
Yeah, and his lessons were so expensive. So that's Jethro Burns from Homer and Jethro. They were like a folksy comedy team that had a show on TV in the 60s.
Yeah.
And the lessons were so expensive per half hour that my dad and I shared the lesson. So I would take like 15 minutes and then my dad would take the second 15 minutes. He was like, I don't even know, like $50 a half hour or something in the 60s.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah. I could see that being a split up lesson. Yeah. So you went from being in music. Do you still play?
I do. I mostly play ukulele right now.
Really?
And partly because it's portable. You know, playing guitar, like trying to talk the flight attendants into letting you carry on your guitar is not a nice conversation. They're always fighting on. I thought, well, what can I carry on? I know, ukulele. But the funny thing, when I've got my ukulele in its case on my back and I'm getting on a flight, someone will say, "Are you a tennis player?" And I say, "Do I look like a tennis player? Because I'm kind of a big girl." Just get sort of humorous.
that's funny.
You know, because I can play at events, I can sing happy birthday to people if they need it. And it's just, I think it's good for your brain to translate. It's like translating the language, translate music from a sheet to your brain, to your fingers.
Absolutely.
My dad was a musician most of his life and lived to be 88. So I think that was part of his secret to a long life, was this transposing in his mind all the time, his trumpet lines or piano or whatever.
Yeah. Very cool. So how did you go from there into, say, art school? Like, where was that transition? How did that occur?
So I started playing music with my family, my dad and my brother, when I was 6 years old. And that's what we did for family vacations. I joke, we're like the Von Trapp family singers, but without the Nazis.
Right.
So we travel around the country and play at like Disneyland and Expo 67 in Montreal and, you know, the World's Fair in Spokane, Washington in 74. We go to the North Carolina Fiddlers Convention. Mm-hmm. So I missed a lot of school as a kid.
Yeah.
Wasn't a good speller anyway, and I have dyslexia, so school wasn't my thing.
Wow.
But what did become my thing was connecting with people whether it was on stage or off stage. So fast forward, in high school, I studied silver and goldsmithing, which is like jewelry making.
That's amazing.
I love it, but I kind of reached the limit of my high school's classes. Find a local goldsmith to apprentice with. And after that, I ended up going to art school, going to Cleveland Institute of Art, which is called CIA. But yeah. You know, there's also the Culinary Institute. So I went to CIA, but not that. So I go to art school because of my love of silver and goldsmithing. And my after school job at first is being a strolling balladeer at a restaurant. Like, I'm still like singing, you know, for work.
Yeah.
Because it's what I know how to do. So I started waitressing, and I loved waitressing. It was just like performing. Yeah. You know, you're like connecting with total strangers.
When you come in there, whatever you have from beforehand, you come in there, you let it go because you have to put on, you have to be their server, be there for them.
Right. And it was kind of the same sort of thing. You know, my dad and I always sang New Year's Eve somewhere. You know, we were never going to parties. We were always making the party. We were the entertainment at the party.
Gotcha.
So I was already sort of, you know, predisposed to serving others because of being in the music business. And I loved sort of the chemistry and physics that was happening between these ingredients. And I would explain this to my customers and, you know, describe the cooking techniques. And I didn't really cook at the time, though. When I applied as a waitress, I was very ready to sort of, you know, connect with total strangers, help explain the food, help them, you know, not have menu remorse and pick the wrong thing for them. Mm-hmm. And I took it really seriously. So the word restaurant comes from the word to restore. The French verb for it. And I thought that that was my job. Like the reason I was there at this restaurant, you know, at people's tables was to help restore them back to their best self.
Wow.
They're tired, they're cranky, they're hungry, they're, you know, before we had the term angry. And so I needed to be empathic about what their needs were. And that's sort of the whole service industry, anticipating people's needs before they even know they have them. So I took that super seriously. I give great waitress. I love it. I love describing the food. I love describing the cooking techniques. I love taking care of people. But after about 2 or 3 weeks, what happened was we had a no-show, no-call is what we call it in my business. Yeah. One of the line cooks didn't show up for work.
Wow.
And the manager looked at me and she said, "Gail, you know, Brad didn't show up. Can you cook?" And I said, "No, I can't cook. I'm from the North Shore of Chicago. You know, we make reservations."
That's funny.
She threw an apron at me and she said, "You can cook now. Get in the kitchen."
Wow. Wow.
And I was absolutely terrified. I'd never cooked professionally. And granted, it was a vegetarian restaurant, so not super hard recipes. You know, no proteins to cook really. But I had never worked a line. I had never, you know, had 5 orders going at once.
Wow.
And I get in the kitchen and I'm completely terrified. I'm 19 years old. And after about 5 seconds, like second number 6, I have this really odd, and I get choked up about it every time I talk about it, this very odd sense of calm come over me. Like I had found my home.
Wow.
Like I found where I belonged. And I was able to, I think it's because of how well I knew the menu and how much I described the dishes to guests. I sort of, the waitress in me kind of talked to the chef in me and said, "Okay, you know, it's sesame oil and it's sauteed and it's got a little sage." And I just kind of followed the description of the dish.
Wow.
And they came out. It was like Ratatouille kind of where I had directing me. But I'll never forget that night after work. I was so elated and it was like a calling, and I ran home and I remember calling my parents and saying, "I figured out what," you know, after they've paid for a year of college, my poor, you know, folk singing dad found tuition for college. I'm like, "I figured out what I really want to do. I want to be a chef." So I had I had that spark for it. And
yeah.
And it's, you know, taken me through my whole 40-year career so far. And you see how the smile on my face?
Like, absolutely. I'm so happy. Absolutely. And, you know, I know there were those hard choices that you had to make. There is a lot that happens between the recognition of what you're supposed to do and finally accepting it and still the journey of feeling you've gotten to some major accomplishments. But what were some of the challenges along the road there when you decided I'm going to pursue being a chef all the way?
Well, the first challenge was, this was, you know, 1975, 76, before Wolfgang Puck had legitimized our field.
Mm.
So, you know, first of all, my parents pictured like blue collar, sweaty, you know, guy on the line smoking a cigarette with a bottle of brandy, like the stereotype of what a cook was.
Yeah.
I had to overcome not only that for myself, but, you know, try to convince my tribe that it wasn't like that anymore. Then there was overcoming the discrimination of being a woman. I was always the only woman or girl in the kitchen. It was me and 20 guys. So that that kind of made me learn some skills. I'm not sure I'm proud of.
Absolutely.
They were survival skills in a man's world.
Yeah.
So there was that challenge. Then there's just, you know, the hours. I mean, and stamina. It's, you know, 16, 18 hour days, lack of sleep, the desire to be in a relationship and yet can't say, oh yeah, I'll be done by 9 and so we can go out. Like I probably lost my first marriage just based on the restaurant business because I had a very unpredictable life.
Yeah.
You know, my husband would be like, when are you going to be home? I'm like, 7 o'clock. And then I'd call 5 of 7 and say, the party went up by 50 and the waiter dropped the first 20 desserts. So I got to remake everything. So I don't know when I'm going to be home.
Yeah. And your husband's, you're probably, I don't want to say what he was thinking, but I'm sure in his mind, he's probably to some degree, well, what does that have to do with?
Right. You know? And what's more important here, you know, me or 50 desserts. And I chose the 50 desserts.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's tough to have a relationship. Kids is even more, you know, out of the question. I always feel like, though, I am just the poster child for it can work.
Yeah, because you have 3 amazing kids, right?
I have 3 kids. And married. I will say I've been married 3 times. It took me 3 tries to get it right.
Yeah.
I was married to a chef for the second one, which, you know, everyone's like, oh, it must be great being married to a chef. Like, you must eat really well. And just so you know what you eat when you're married to a chef for dinner? Breakfast cereal. So all those illusions of like foie gras in the middle of the night.
No, no foie gras from the restaurant. That's not why I'm married. You didn't bring home any creme brulee, huh? Every night for dessert. No.
You know, he'd come home and collapse because he's got the same 16-hour day you do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. But I, you know, was able to kind of have it all, and I feel super fortunate. Not only, you know, have a really full career that got very diverse. You know, I've been a chef in the era when Food Network happened. So I was showing the Food Network for 10 years, you know, in the early days of Food Network. So I got to teach and connect with, you know, thousands of people a day, tens of thousands of people a day, which has just been wonderful.
Wow. Yeah. How did that come about? I mean, at what point in the journey did the whole Sweet Dreams show and I guess one of those things where, how did this even happen? Right.
Right. And people ask, like, how do I get a show on food? I'm like, not the way I did. It doesn't work. But what it was, so when I was married to the chef, I wrote our first book in 1996, I think it was called American Brasserie. It was a quiet year. I wrote our first book. I had our first baby and I opened a bakery that year and we already had a brasserie. So that's
the kind stress of wasn't enough, right?
Overachiever I was. So we come out with our first book. And when you go on book tour, sometimes you go on different television shows to promote it.
Right.
So
right.
We were booked on Food Network just to promote our first book. And from that, I think I got invited back to, you know, do something with Sarah Moulton. And then I got invited back to do a week long. There was something called Chef du Jour.
Yeah.
There was another one called Baker's Dozen. And I did that for a week.
Very
so
cool.
So they couldn't pay me back. Very and cool. I was good on TV because of my dad, because of my experience on stage with my dad.
There you go. There you go.
And then they decided, you know, they really need a dessert show. They've had enough of Bobby Flay's grilled chicken. Like, they're, the staff all eat.
Grill of Bobby Flay. Like,
we need some chocolate. We have a pastry show on this network. And I got the call. So it wasn't that I submitted a videotape or anything. They called one day. I'm at work. You know, it's like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, prepping for service at my restaurant, True, that I still have.
Yeah. Okay.
And usually I used to go to New York for stuff and be on Sarah Moulton's show. Like, if I was ever going to be in New York, I'd call Food Network and say, hey, I'm going to be in New York and I have the afternoon of the 13th free. Can I be on Sarah's show? And they'd always say yes.
Wow.
And we were good together. We were like both short and she was warm. And, you know, we had a nice time cooking together. And she didn't do as many desserts as I did. So I could like finish off her menu with a dessert.
Absolutely. Hey, everyone. Hope you've been enjoying this episode of I Did It My Way. I'm Lauren Hines, your hostess. And at this point, we wanted to encourage you all to let us know if you have a business or you have a project that you're pushing forward. We would love to welcome you as a sponsor for I Did It My Way. In addition, we're here in the local Georgia area, so we have other opportunities if you are interested in being able to expand your business here in Atlanta, the Metro Atlanta area, or if you are local to here. We want to encourage you to reach out and find out some opportunities available through the I Did It My Way sponsorship program, as well as some on-the-ground
activities that we do through Atlanta Wedding and Event Professionals Network throughout the year. We have dozens of opportunities for you to be able to partner with us for more than simply the podcast, which of course will reach our audience, but also, of course, if you want more live on the ground visibility as well, in the more high-touch capacity, we're happy to be able to introduce some of those opportunities to you too. More so, we just love partnering with other vibrant entrepreneurs who are creating their stories every single day. And so help us along our journey, and we'll help you along yours as you consider partnering with us for I Did It My Way as a sponsor and beyond. If you want to reach out to us, you can contact me, Lauren Hines. You can reach out at info@atlantawep.com, or you can reach out to us by phone at 1-800-316-7816. And we look forward to hearing from you soon. Enjoy the rest of your journey, and we hope you enjoy the rest of this episode. Thanks for checking it out.
You mentioned before dyslexia, that you have dyslexia. And I know you've authored several cookbooks and co-authored several cookbooks, and I see your amazing library behind you. So how does that work, and how has that been in your journey? Because thank you for sharing that. You know, that was super transparent too.
Well, I think it's really interesting because, you know, I'm a child of I was born in 56. So go to public school in the 60s, and they didn't really have names for stuff yet. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know as a little kid why I had to keep rereading a line and it wasn't sticking and it wasn't making sense, and why when I spelled words, the letters were out of order, or I couldn't remember letters in order for spelling. Right. And no one really paid much attention. They just kind of pushed it to the next grade. So it wasn't until later in life I found out, like, oh, that is a thing with a name. So it's a little ironic that I'm a writer. Yeah. And I think I mentioned earlier, my mom encouraged me to flunk typing so I wouldn't be anybody's secretary. Right. And then I grew up to be a writer. So I'm like, mom. Two strikes.
The mom.
You know, at the time, you didn't think that, oh, my dyslexic daughter is going to be an author. Mm. So I think I've been able to retrain my brain and sort of find different pathways and tricks for remembering spelling. And just this year, so I turned 60 this year, and just this year I started reading. I've never been able to. I either fall asleep or I just can't retain the information.
Yeah.
It used to take me like a year to read a whole book, and I would have to keep rereading because every time I picked it up, I forgot.
Yeah, what happened? What I read
previously, so I'd have to start over.
Wow. So when did you... You seem very comfortable with who you are, and you're so down to earth, and you're so genuine and so fun. When did you get to the point? Because I know you said you were so nervous in the Julia Child video, but at some point in your journey, you said, this is my voice. This is who I am. Do you remember?
I do. And I was giving a cooking demonstration at a grocery store called Sunset Foods. They had like a second floor where they did cooking classes.
Right.
And I remember, you know, I got asked to do a cooking class there, and I said yes, and I'd never really done them before.
Gotcha.
And people showed up. And I remember, like,
how many people showed up? I missed that last part. I'm sorry.
80 people.
80 people.
Up.
I was hoping for
like 10, you know.
Wow.
So, it looked like a sea of people to me, like at your wedding, you know, so many people. And I remember my face like turning bright red. Like I got, you know, dry mouth, and I was like blazing red, embarrassed. And sweating bullets, like, you know, normal nervous reaction. And I remember just sort of pushing through that, just sort of like talking through it.
Yeah.
When I got to the other side, I realized that I had a knack for explaining things. And once I felt that, I would ask people, like, do you have any questions? And they didn't have many. And I was like, is that because I'm such a good teacher? Like, I'd sort of try to draw them out. But it just turned out that I was able to, you know, move my hands and talk at the same time, which a lot of chefs can't do. They're either doing action or they're talking. Yeah. But I could do it at the same time. Like, you'll watch chefs when they're cooking, they stop, their hands stop moving when they're explaining something. But I could actually, like, keep going.
Wow.
And that was a big part of it. And I would just explain what I'm doing.
That's cool. Literally. Yeah, I mean, I remember you mentioned before you were singing and singing while you were cooking in the kitchen before, I think it was, or you were singing while you were serving. I'm trying to remember when that was, but that has a lot to do with it. No matter what you're doing, you can still do both, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess my brain is sort of set up to do, you know, kind of multitasking.
Very cool.
Maybe that's the female brain. I'm not sure.
Right. So are you still running your restaurant today, or how's everything with True?
True's doing great. We got our second Michelin star this year, which was
awesome.
Much better than the opposite.
right.
That was great. But I don't have any day-to-day responsibilities there anymore. I'm still a partner in the restaurant. So I get to take credit for anything good that happens. But I don't have to run it or anything like that. Right now, mostly what I do is I do consulting. So I develop menus and recipes and restaurant concepts for new restaurants for other people, and develop desserts for people. I do something called food innovation, which is developing new products for large companies, whether they're restaurant companies or, retail products. What else do I do?
So you're now an inventor and a scientist. Who knew that? I didn't know that part about you.
I'm a what?
You're an inventor and scientist now for a large company.
Well, there's this interesting world of consulting out there. You know, once you get to a certain point in your career, and if you're able to cope with not having a regular paycheck, like I sort of cobbled together a living from cooking demos. I have two classes on craftsy.com that I make income off of. I have passive income from a beef jerky company that I invented some recipes for called Think Jerky.
Right.
And I do consulting for a couple different companies. So I think because my dad was a folk singer and a musician, you know, you don't know where your next gig's coming from. So I was always kind of comfortable with things being slightly irregular.
Yes. Unpredictable. When did you know it was time to start True? I know Tremonto, you were colleagues and were colleagues from beforehand, but how did you know it was time to go ahead and take the plunge and start an actual restaurant?
Well, we had done
Raspberry before, right?
Yeah, and actually we did Trio before that. So let's see. Rick and I, so he's the chef I was married to that I had all that breakfast cereal with.
Gotcha.
Rick and I, we married in 1988. We've been working together since 83 or 84. Yeah. We go to New York City together. We moved to Chicago together. We work sometimes together, sometimes not. We marry in 88 and do a couple restaurant openings for other people. Then we go off to England and work there for 3 years.
Wow.
We worked at a country house hotel for 2 years, kind of like Downton Abbey, but and then we work in London for a year.
Wow.
And then we come back and open Trio. So we do our first restaurant where we're the owners with a third partner, Henry Adanya,
right,
who's down in Hawaii now. We do that. We do brasserie tea. We do the bakery. And then we have a falling out with our partner at Trio. We have like a restaurant divorce from him, and we lose our fine dining restaurant.
Wow.
And Rich Melman, who's a huge restaurateur in Chicago and nationally, he kind of knew that we were breaking up from our partner and thought it was a shame, and offered to like counsel us, almost like marriage counseling. It was like business partner counseling.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost a divorce. I mean, it's a separation when you lose a partner in business. Yeah.
Yeah. So he actually met with us like every week, you know, Wednesdays at 2:00, we had this appointment with him to try to patch up the relationship and find out where it was dysfunctioning. And we never really got it back together.
Yeah.
But after that, Rich said, you know what? Someday I'm going to do a fine dining restaurant with you guys. When I have the right space, I'll let you know. Wow. So about a year later, Rich came to us and said, I think I got a space. Will you come see it?
Nice.
So it was really Rich and his very deep pockets that helped us start True.
Absolutely. That's awesome. That's a great story. That was a major roadblock. I mean, you decided to kind of keep going past that. And now you've gotten to the point where you're kind of able to dictate, you know, what you do on a day-to-day basis within your company. At what point do you feel like you got to the point where you could do that or say that you've arrived? I don't even know how you'd even describe that, because everyone has different philosophies on that.
Right. Well, you know, it kind of came naturally, because as we opened True, took like 2 years of construction. We opened in May of 99.
Yeah.
By the end of 99, Rick and I get divorced. So our marriage does not survive the birth of this restaurant.
Yes.
And a couple weeks later, I get that call from the Food Network. So sort of as the restaurant is, you know, in its first year, I have to figure out a way to be in New York for 2 weeks at a time to take a show.
Wow.
So I learn how to kind of manage from afar. I give Megan, my pastry sous chef, you know, more control, and she's kind of me when I'm not there. So I learn how to manage, you know, staff and keep things going even when I'm away. Right. Wow. So I always was like, you know, really valuable when I was there, but it wasn't essential to the restaurant that I always be in house. I didn't have a role that, like, if I got sick that night, we couldn't open.
Yeah.
So sort of gradually I became more the person that promoted the restaurant. You know, I would do public appearances and I would, you know, do food and wine festivals and get invited to events like Where I Met You in Atlanta.
Right.
And so part of my job was doing this national promotion that, you know, I can't send my sister sous chef to do that. No one
yeah.
up at her demo. You know, and I would do television and morning news shows. And so that became part of my role at the restaurant and a valuable one. You know, I was on Oprah twice.
Yeah.
You know,
so cool. Twice, right. Yeah, you've done so many appearances, Gail. I mean, that's just such a blessing that, you know, you've been able to be so many places and be seen so much. But what do you feel was, it's hard, this one's probably a hard one to ask because between James Beard Foundation and the Michelin Awards, what do you feel in totality, not necessarily career, it could be family, but what do you feel is your largest accomplishment if you could pick one?
I was afraid you're going to ask that question.
Were you?
It's like, that's like asking, like, oh, which of your kids is your favorite kid, you know?
Yeah, you can say family overall.
I was going to originally talk about, you know, after I had my own show, then, like, I got invited to do Iron Chef and,
yeah.
and with Rick, with my ex. Like, we still cooked together after that.
Yeah.
And then I remember that I'm avoiding the question really. Then I remember sort of transitioning from having to be the competitor to being the judge. That was, you know, I would get asked to judge Top Chef and to not to be on it, but to judge Last Cake Standing or to judge Food Network Challenge. So, and I do a lot of judging. I judge like a ton of pie contests and I'm judging you right now, actually, as we speak. So natural born judge. Okay. I don't know that I can pick one thing yet.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, that's awesome. I think that's amazing. I think many of us can identify the one time or the other, but the fact that you can't is, I think, a goal that we all can strive to.
I mean, I remember the moments. I remember, you know, getting my first James Beard Award and giving the weeping speech, and then I'm like, I better go fix my mascara, and I run out, you know, I'm at Lincoln Center, and I run out to the lobby to go to the bathroom to fix my makeup, and Bobby Flay's running out after me. He's like, Gail, I'm like, what? He's like, you know what this means, right? You know, which is one of those questions, like, you have no idea how, you know, my dad used to ask me questions like that, like, a question, and you don't know the answer, and you feel shitty that you don't know the answer. I'm right. Like, no, what does it mean? He goes, you can double your day rate. Like,
yes, earning
like, was like all about money. Like, what you said.
That's so funny. That was the last thing he probably expected.
Right. I thought he was going to, I don't know, like, I don't give you a big hug or something, you know? But he was thinking economics. It was so funny.
Absolutely. Bobby Flay. I mean,
I was thinking, you know, doesn't my underwear look killer? Because I was wearing like this, you know, real push up thing and bags and everything, you know?
Very cool. That's awesome, Gail. So tell me what's happening now. I mean, all lovers of Gail again want to know what's going on now. And with the, of course, the crafts you started and beer, and what's happening in your life now that you're so excited about, or what are some projects?
You know, part of it is just trying to continue and maintain it. Like you mentioned, I have a root beer company, Gail's Root Beer. I've been doing for 20 years now, just so that I would always have root beer. Because when I lived in England, they don't have it there really. And I'm like, when I got back from England, I'm like, I'm never doing that again. Yeah. I don't know how to make this stuff. So I used to, like, the only place you can get root beer in England is in London at McDonald's.
Oh, wow.
I can't be seen going into a McDonald's.
No, you can't.
I used to go, when I was in London, I would like go stand outside a McDonald's with like a pound coin, like a kid outside a liquor store.
Yes.
And yes. Going, I'm like, can you get me a root beer and put it in like a plain brown paper bag? No, you know, I was afraid. The newspapers are ruthless there. I think 2 years ago, I was doing 60,000 bottles a year of the root beer. Last year, we got up to 70,000 bottles a year, which I don't think this is right, but that's considered small batch in the soda pop industry. I think that's a lot. Isn't that a lot?
Yeah. I mean, producing 1,000 of anything is a lot. But
70,000 bottles. So we'll see if we can increase that in the next few years. But one of the fun things that it sounds like I might be doing is I might be doing a ninth book. So I have 8 books already that are mainly cookbooks.
Yeah.
Doing a ninth book with my brother. About sort of self-improvement and cooking.
Very cool.
So some lifestyle and some recipes combined.
Can you tell me before we, I mean, we're closing down now and I could just talk with you really for as long as the day allowed, but we do have life to go back to. But would you mind sharing, you know, what made the journey all worth it for you, you know, and maybe if there was a hardest point that, you know, sharing that and just saying what made this whole part worth it for you?
There was definitely, you know, harder parts. I remember when I worked, I was Charlie Trotter's pastry chef right before I did Trio. So before I controlled my own life, that was the last time I was an employee. Mm-hmm. And after I finished up with Charlie Trotter, I became an employer. So that was the year I transitioned and we opened Trio. So that was 1993. I also lose my mom that year. Mm-hmm. So that was tough, which also means like the really good bit, like the chunky, juicy bit of my career, she never got to see. The woman who, you know, wanted her own career but wasn't able to, mm-hmm. raise the daughter to go for that.
Right.
So I remember that being sort of, you know, an interesting turning point year. Not only working for Charlie was, you know, really intense and really long hours and exhausting and crazy making, but it was sort of a perfect last job to help me define for myself what kind of boss am I going to be. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm a kinder, gentler boss because of my experience working with Charlie, to be honest. You know, a lot of people don't like to maybe admit that, but
about the reputation there. I mean, that's amazing that you, I mean, just to stick through it, it's hard. And if you ever worked in the restaurant industry, to be under that executive type of chef, you know, and you worked.
Well, it was just super long hours. You know, he didn't really respect labor laws at all. We didn't have a dishwasher. It was a hand wash kitchen. Wow. So you washed all your own pots and pans. So after a, you know, 14-hour day, I had to take my oven apart and like clean all my oven racks. And so I really appreciate my dishwashers.
Yeah.
My
restaurants. Absolutely.
You know, they were the hardest. They're the most important part of the whole, you know, all the gears that make that machine work.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was a great experience and a nice way to transition into understanding what it's like to be responsible for people's lives.
If you could give advice to, this is also another one that's like, okay, well, how do I pull out of my golden nugget? But, you know, just some advice from your journey to impart to someone else, what would you just say today, you know?
Well, we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, return all your phone calls, answer all your emails, remember to say thank you, like write a thank you note.
Mm.
But probably the most important thing is to always wear comfortable shoes. Because if your feet hurt, like, you're not a nice person. So, you know, like, don't wear underwear that, like, rides up. Or, like, be comfortable.
No strings, no strings, just so we know.
Yes, why wear that stuff? Yeah, so, you know? Flossing's important.
That's good. That's really good. That's how you keep your smile, huh?
But it's, you know, probably part of what I'm proud of myself for doing, which is be honest with yourself. Be honest about what really excites you, you know, what has longevity for you, and what really isn't your area of expertise or area of interest.
Yeah, that's good.
And whatever isn't, surround yourself with people who that's their area of expertise. Like, don't be afraid to admit, like, I'm just not good at technology, so let me get a guy that is.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'm bad at staying on schedule, so let me have someone who I'm accountable to.
Yeah.
For, you know, writing this cookbook in 6 months. So be honest about what your shortcomings are, and then find someone who is strong in that area, and saddle up, you know, partner up.
Wow. Thank you, Gail. That's some good stuff right there. Thank you. I appreciate you saying that, because there are too many folks who are trying to be the answer, the end all be all for everything. You'll go crazy before you even get to any point of significance or accomplishment.
Right. And you'll fail. Like, if you're bad at numbers, that's okay. But, you know, so get a good numbers guy that you can understand what he's saying.
Yeah. Good stuff. I've been so encouraged by this, Gail. I can only imagine what people, when they hear this, are going to receive from it. And I'm really grateful that you've spent the time with us. If you guys want to find Gail, you can go to www.gailgand.com just to find out what's coming next, news and updates, of course, and just to see what's happening with Gail and find out more about Gail's root beer, some of the exciting things happening in your life. But Gail, again, I appreciate you taking the time to chat with us. If there's anything else you wanted to say, we're just grateful that you joined us today.
I just want to thank you for your interest in, you know, my life, my silly life and what I do. And it's been such a joy to spend time with you today. Thank you for seeking me out. I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks again for the time, Gail. And to everyone, I did it my way. So we had here, Ms., of course, Chef Gail Gand sharing how she did it her way. You do it your way and be encouraged along the journey that it's not always going to be a straight path. A lot of times to success, there are going to be bumps and roadblocks, but you just remember that you are on your path. You're doing it your way and there's just no other way to do it. So thank you again, Gail, for joining us. And everyone, have an awesome day.
Thanks.
Thank you for being a part of the magic with I Did It My Way. Visit us at www.atlantawep.com.